when Mohammed Al-Ras refused the orders of the Zionist soldiers, that on that day Lebanon defeated Zionism in Maroun Al-Ras. So this is a very emotional and historic area that we're in right here as we look deep across the vista of Palestine.
We make our studies and we do our research and we stay up on the news because we're interested in the subject, but I sense that even among the mass of society in, say, Lebanon, there's an anxiety and an interest in the future, the immediate future. People come up to me and they tell me, is there going to be war? They ask me, is there going to be war? And you sense in these people who have experienced the civil war, they've experienced in this country more suffering and more anxiety day-to-day problems that most of the world don't have. I'm talking about the infrastructure, the disunity of the government, electricity, internet, and all this kind of thing. And they ask these questions, and I sense, even in myself and my friends in America and in Europe and on the internet, this feeling that something cataclysmic might happen. Not in the sense that we're alarmist particularly, some of us are quite fatalistic, but there seem to be signs. There seem to be signs that something, we're moving rapidly toward some kind of climax, some kind of event. Most people think it will be a violent event, and with respect to the American political scene, I noticed the other day a new study showing that 67% of the American people, for example, claim they don't know much or anything about Islam, but over 50% have fear of it and they don't like Islam.
Muslims must be defeated unless we're going to all ruin the whole Western civilization.
Nothing good is going to come out of it unless they keep fighting all the way with it till they wipe them all out.
There's a lot of people, as you know from your experience in the States, and they just say, nuke them. Let's nuke them and get it over with. And I think what we've seen in this conflict between the narrative of the future and the judgment of this period of history, I'm thinking of the Zionist narrative, which, as you know, has so dominated in Europe and America through the media, the film industry, Congress, the sense and the foreign policy. That is forced on the executive branch, the White House, by the Congress through the Zionist lobby. It almost seems fantastic how the forces of Zionism have worked their way into key elements of our society to present their narrative.
Is the fundamentalist Christian community. Fundamentalists are often represented by the televangelists that are on TV. They believe that a strong Israel is a part of God's plan. They believe that the day will come when a battle will occur in the plain of Armageddon in the Middle East. There will be the forces of truth and righteousness on one side, forces of evil on the other side. And in that struggle, the Christian forces led by the second coming of Jesus Christ will prevail. All of the Jews will be either destroyed or converted instantly to Christianity.
I think that the Zionists believe that their best hope to control this end period that is approaching is through the Christian Zionists, who you know, the dispensationalists, who argue that the sooner we can bring the Armageddon, the Megiddo, the rapture, judgment day, the better. And one of the, of course, the ironies is that these people, these evangelical Christians, who accept the Old Testament idea that there's a chosen people, and they have this narrative that there should be conflict, you know, and they believe that the Arabs and the Muslims are a form of devil. And that the more pressure on the Palestinians, for example, will end violence, is a fine thing because it encourages the coming of the Messiah, Jesus Christ, which the Jewish religion doesn't accept as they look for their own Messiah, but they're willing to go along with it. But the Christians say, and it's pretty clear, they don't really respect Judaism or the Jews, but the Jews are an instrument to force this conflict, and then on Judgment Day, the Jews are to all convert to Jesus, or they burn in hell. And either way, it's fine with the evangelicals, because the scenario of, based on biblical prophecy plays out the way they want it. Their version of it is that they triumph, Christianity triumphs, and nobody else, you know, really matters. But it seems that in this period of history, things are speeding up and moving towards something like that. People are preparing for it. Certainly the evangelicals are filling their churches in America on this theme. Yeah. And of course the Judaism is going along with that, being manipulated, I think, by the Zionists. And the Zionism, they're purely political. They have the goal of land and domination and expansion, and again that suits the evangelical power in America just fine, because that's consistent with their program. This drum beating on terrorism. We have to fight them and push the end times, push the apocalypse. Is changing. I sometimes think that America is like this huge superliner, you know, it moves, but to turn the opinion, to change it, is so slow because it's so huge. But when it does begin to change, then it moves. And I think we saw something of that in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. You know, remember in 64 even, 65, 66, 67, still a vast majority of the people supported that war because of the yellow peril, the terrorism, China, that this domino theory, remember, it's going to sweep around and it's going to get us all. And it was just after, I think, the My Lai massacre. Revolted the public, that people said, this is not us. Revolted the public, that people said, this is not us.
Well, we are standing at Maroun El Ras on the blue line between Lebanon and Palestine. And there, as you know, many ideas about the gates to enter Palestine. One of them is represented by this flag. But you know that during the July 2006 war, the Israeli tanks came across this hill, down this area, and swarmed around Maroun El Ras. And during the battle that lasted 14 days in Maroun El Ras, they lost something like 31 tanks. And they were stopped by the resistance in Maroun El Ras, and they occupied many homes. And there's the gentleman who lives just up the road here, an elderly fellow, was told by the Israelis, it's a famous person for the resistance, they told him to leave his house because others were fleeing, and he refused. So they dragged him and they beat him, and they beat him. They parked a tank right outside his house for 1 week. He didn't die. He crawled back up, and he refused to leave, and he's become a hero.
On August 15 of 2006, just after the war, he's 83 years old. He was approached when the Israelis invaded Lebanon on the 13th of July. They came to his house. His house is right at Maroun El Ras. When we think of this, these pressures and this urgency by different groups to win the end times with their narrative, you know, their vision based on their prophecy of the past and how they see things are going and how they want them to go, how would we use the medium of music to enter this political stage and this frenzy rushing toward the end times?
And the music, it's really easy to do that. Let me tell you why. In music, it has its own language.
One day, very soon, we'll be talking in Jerusalem.
I feel this.
I should hope so.
Yeah.
and Washington or the Pentagon, they're going to know that we are going to be in there and we'll be friends with the Jews.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, but not the Zionists.
No, I understand. Yes, we have our work cut out in
people,
our country.
The Jews, we are together as same mentality and attitude.
Yeah.
So we don't hate Jews, we love the Jews,
yes.
But we hate the Zionism.
Yes, I understand perfectly.
Agree with that?
I agree completely with that.
I am Dr. Omar from Palestine, from Acca.
Of course.
My city is 20 kilometers from here.
My God! Are you ready to go with me?
I am ready to go by gun. I cannot go by passport.
Me neither.
I can go there by gun.
Yes. I think that the resistance equals return. The only return will be done by resistance.
We
That's
shall
what
overcome
it means.
Someday.
Yes.
I do believe we shall overcome someday.
Yes, someday soon. Yes. Inshallah.
Inshallah, sure.
Who thought the Berlin Wall would go so quickly? Or apartheid South Africa would collapse so quickly?
Yes.
I sense that we're getting to a point we will see a quick collapse of the Zionist occupiers.
Yes.
I think the forces of history and resistance are coming together. This road is the road that is patrolled by the Zionist forces as they go back and forth. We're standing on the blue line, essentially, which is actually Lebanese territory. It's an artificial line. The Kiryat Shemona settlement is over this direction. Yeah, these are probably maybe either transporting civilian employees of, or maybe it's, actually, I don't know, maybe a regular bus service. The occupation begets resistance. These people know they are on stolen land. If you consider the recent studies of the psychological studies from academics inside Israel about the settlers, the individuals who occupy those settlements, and the analysis, they have many psychological problems. You cannot steal a person's land and their culture and be happy. Even if they deny the truth to the next generation, the younger generation finds this out. So they are not a happy people. We know that from the media. Increasingly, as you know, they are taking second passports. There are over 2 million Israelis who have American passports. And as you know, they've said that if there's another war with Hezbollah, they're leaving. Only God knows the future, but there is evidence that certainly the Americans are concerned and the CIA is concerned, not concerned so much, I think, increasingly about the survival of Israel. I think that the American public is certainly coming more and more to realize that you cannot sustain a colonial enterprise like that. Academics are knowing this. The government surely knows this. Exactly the 15th of August, the 34th day when the ceasefire held, Israel was hoping that the people would stay away and this could be a no man's land. And Hezbollah understood that, and so they encouraged people to come. So as you remember from Sanaa Gardens where they were camped, the people from the south, and in Syria and in Beirut and Juni and so many areas in the mountains, they clogged the highways and they came here, mattresses piled on their vehicles, children hanging out the windows, and they insisted to come and see the rubble and to make an act of defiance, an act of resistance, and returning immediately. And so that was quite a historic event in itself. And that happened on the August 15 of 2006. the resistance is clever in that respect, and we've seen them do it throughout history. But what they've done is they made a nice cafe, so the international community, today we have over 50 countries from North America and Asia and all six continents here today, and this is a showcase, a place to come and reflect and to dream memories of your Palestine when, remember, they used to walk back and forth, even as far as Haifa and Safed. The Palestinians would come into southern Lebanon without restriction. So there's a place to look and dream and fantasize and to increase one's resolve for resistance to liberate Palestine. So I think that this area here is quite frankly remarkable. And as we see today, hundreds and hundreds of foreigners have come to read a declaration supporting the resistance and supporting the liberation of occupied Palestine.
دموس خلقت بأيار وصار عمرك 8 سنين دموس خبب عن مصر لبنان.
So this road running along the horizon in down up to this area is the so-called blue line. We have on this side the Lebanese army, Hezbollah and UNIFIL, and on that side are the Zionist forces. Particularly, there's a Zionist base up here on the top of this hill, and of course electronic equipment along this whole area. This is a Zionist settlement over here, and another one to our right. So there are two here, and a large one up above on the hill. Of course, as you know, it was July 13 that they crossed here, and they had a horrific battle of Imran al-Ras, and as you know, in Bin Jubail, and Aitashab, and Aitayun. And after those battles and that stalemate, when they couldn't penetrate further, they got bogged down, and their losses were tremendous, and that's why finally, after 33 days, they agreed to the ceasefire, and they retreated. We'll be right back.